Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Phidias Club. This is a show where we get people from different parts of the world and different cultures to talk to us and discuss the current events and hopefully get a different perspective on the things that are happening in the world. And this episode is going to be a little bit different. My name is Patrick Beja, and I didn't have a show planned for this period of the month. And this, honestly, would have been an editorial that I usually save for my Patreon supporters, which, by the way, if you're one of them, thank you very much for supporting the show. If you're not, feel free to go to the show notes and direct yourself to Patreon and maybe look at the offerings there and see if you want to support the show financially, because that's how the show is made possible. And I every month or so, I do an editorial sharing my thoughts on a specific topic. And this episode would have been one of those, but I felt it might be a good idea. It might even be a little bit important for the discussions we usually have on this show to make it public. So this is going to be a little bit different. As I said, it's going to be shorter and it's going to be me alone sharing my thoughts on some things. Well, on one thing really, which is what we're seeing happening in the US in the pandemic. And that's going to be a discussion that I think is going to be polarizing, or even for this audience to an extent, which is the first point of, I guess, bewilderment for me and for many others outside the US specifically. We all have discussions, we all have disagreements, but the extent to which this has become a contentious issue in the US is, well, again, bewildering for people that are not living there. I'm guessing a few of you in the US are also bewildered. But let's take things in order. A month ago, we made an episode with a couple of conservative friends who were discussing the situation of the epidemic in the US. And we made the argument then, which I think has validity still, that by looking at the numbers and looking at things a little bit objectively, we could analyze the situation in the US and maybe go against the perceived idea that things were being managed very poorly in the US. It was especially difficult for me because, as you all know, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump. But I had to admit that even though there was a relative lack of federal guidance from the federal government, the situation in the US was mostly satisfactory compared to similar countries and similar situations in the Western world. If you remember, back then, we saw the numbers that indicated that the number of deaths per million in the US put the country in the mid-range of European or Western countries in the ranking of doing worst to best. So even though I personally don't really like Donald Trump or the way he conducts his government, I think the numbers showed that he didn't tell states what to do, and states were handling it as well as they could. I think we also made the argument that the U.S. is very big, very large, and some parts of it were much more affected by the epidemic than other parts. And so on a local level, it could make sense to relax lockdown lockdown recommendations, or even not indications, lockdown orders, and relax them because that zone was not highly impacted, or even was very little impacted. And I think, again, at the time, it made a lot of sense. Now, we are a couple of months later, and we have other numbers. And I hope that the people who were trusting in the idea that you have to look at things objectively back then to defend their own view on things, which I came to because I was looking at the numbers objectively, I hope. So those people will now look at the numbers and realize that the situation has changed, or even if the situation hasn't changed, the look, the way we see it, or the outlook we have on it has to change. I know that some people, and that is the most infuriating thing in this discussion, especially in the US, it means having a divide between the left and the right. And that makes no sense. And I'm sure that some people on the left are looking at this and saying, ha, told you so. And I think that's fair enough. But more importantly, I think some people on the right are going to have a hard time looking at this and now thinking, well, maybe there's a problem there. And maybe there is someone or a group of people responsible for that problem happening. I think a couple of months ago, there were a few people who were on the left side who were unwilling to accept the idea that the situation at that point was not as bad as it could have been. I told them then, look at the numbers, look at the situation, this is how it is. 2 months later, I will tell the same thing to the people on the right who are unwilling to accept that the situation has changed. And let's go through those numbers and sort of lay down our examination of, you know, what's crazy, what's even more infuriating than the divide for this topic, where it shouldn't be a divide. The more infuriating thing is that I'm hesitant to use the word fact when I talk to people in the U.S. I'm hesitant to use the word facts, because if the word fact has become charged, it's like, oh, but, you know, you can interpret the facts, and facts aren't always the same depending on who you listen to and stuff like that. So I'm saying numbers, because thankfully numbers are still a real thing. But in reality, these are the facts, the best representation of the facts that we have. And there's a very easy way of looking at this. You go to google.com, you type in COVID, and it displays a number of different pieces of data, and you can choose which pieces of data you display. The first one is the daily change in number of new cases. Daily change in number of new cases has been stable since roughly the end of March, which might indicate to some, oh, that's great. Stable for 2 months, that's a good handling of it. Except, of course, that is not the aim. I've heard a few people saying, oh, we've flattened the curve. That's not the goal. The long-term goal is not to keep the same number of cases forever. The long-term goal, or, you know, after a few weeks, a few months, the goal is to bring it down, to bring the new cases down. So having a curve of new cases relatively flat is not what you're aiming for. That's not what flattening the curve implies. It's flattening it for a few weeks to manage it, but then you have to bring it down. So it has been stable, which is a bad thing in itself. It shouldn't be stable. It should go down. And in the past few days, it has risen dramatically. We had a couple of days ago over 44,000 new cases in the U.S., and the highest number before that was towards the end of April, about 35,000 new cases. And I'll point out one thing, which I've heard the argument that that's actually normal because you're testing more. And that makes no sense. Obviously, when you're going to test more, you're going to have more cases. But every other country is testing more as well. Every other country in the world has put in place systems to test more. And in those countries, we're getting a dramatic shift in the number of new cases, a dramatic lowering. If I want to give you an example, because I know that many in the US, and I'm sorry if that sounds condescending, but I know by nature, the US is the global empire, so we all look at the US as well as our own country. In the US, usually I think people look more at the US only. So in France, to give you an example, France was very badly hit. France was among those highest impacted countries in Europe at the beginning of the crisis. It was a very high number of new cases and a lot of deaths for the month of March and parts of April. Since the middle of April, with a spike, a couple of spikes here and there due to the reporting method, things has gone down in the number of new cases. And a couple of days ago, on June 22nd, we're recording this on June 29th, we had zero new cases in France. That also happened a couple of days prior. In between, there were a lot of cases. And so this comes and goes. Let's say the number of new cases per day is now in France in the hundreds, not in the thousands, which it was in for a long time until, let's say, the mid-May, something like that. So the fact that you're testing more doesn't justify the incredible, mind-bending spike in the US. Not just spike, but constant number of new cases. Now, that's for new cases. We can look at death per million, which is, again, one of the metrics we used in that episode a couple of months ago with to estimate how well the US was doing. Well, back then, the US was in the middle of the pack. Now, it's reaching the top of the pack. It is at a number currently 390 deaths per million. In France, it's still significantly higher, but 441 deaths per million. The important thing, of course, is that with the increase in number of new cases, of course, some of them are young people that are getting tested, which weren't getting tested before, but it's still going to mean that there's a portion of them who are going to die from the virus, likely going to die from the virus. Not just young people, but I mean among all the people who are tested. So it seems likely that the number of deaths per million is going to keep increasing in the US, given how the number of new cases is not only stable, but actually has increased significantly. So the US is having more and more deaths per million in that ranking, which I think is a fair-ish way of evaluating the country's response to the crisis. You see how many people die compared to the population. Of course, there are other factors, age distribution, population density. There are a number of different factors to take into account. But I'd like to remind people who are saying, You know, if you were saying a couple of months ago, well, the U.S. is having a low number or, you know, mid-ish number of death per million, so they're not doing too badly, it meant something then, that number, right? So it should mean something now. You can't now all of a sudden, because the number doesn't fit your, you know, the way you want to look at things, you can't say, oh, but and no, there are other factors to take into account. So I think it's pretty clear, at least it is to me, that the situation is not being handled the way it should, because in every other Western country that is handling things properly, there are a few exceptions. I think Belgium is having issues. Sweden has decided not to to let the virus run its course, which is coming back to bite them in the ass right now. And with a couple of exceptions, every other country has a handle on the situation and has decreased dramatically the number of new cases and obviously the number of deaths. So it is pretty clear that the US has not done that. That at this point, and we'll see how it keeps going, but at this point, the US as a whole has mismanaged the situation or is on its way to becoming one of the least well-managed situation in this pandemic. Again, it's not at this stage worse than a country like France overall, even though in France, as I've said, there's been a spike and then a steady decrease, and now we're at a point where we record very few or, you know, in the hundreds new cases per day, which is in percentage to the size of the population, a lot better managed. And again, France is not the example you want to be following, especially in the beginning, because we had a lot of deaths. So I think this is a fairly uncontroversial way of looking at the factual numbers. You might have an issue with it. I would argue, I mean, I'm always, you know, happy to hear contrarian arguments, but I think it's a fairly solid way of looking at things. And so we can start exploring the causes, which then becomes, of course, a lot more speculative. But I think it's fairly clear that there has been no strong coordinated federal response. And some people might say, well, you can't apply the same rules to every state and every county because the situation is different per state or county. And that I can understand. Obviously, if President Trump's government was saying every person in the U.S. has to abide by these specific rules, then I don't think it would work. Because again, I'm certain that even to this day, there are different parts of the country that have a different situation. However, I don't think that a federal response and guidelines necessarily implies having a one-size-fits-all policy. I think it would actually be quite silly to go that route. To give you an example, in France, in Finland, we had very few cases and still had a lockdown for a while, as we've discussed. But even in that context, different parts of the country were treated differently. The part around Helsinki was in a more severe government-mandated lockdown because the situation was more dire, and in Finland, dire meant a much less a bad situation than in other parts of Europe, but it was locked down. The government passed emergency laws, and that allowed them to do that. In France, even as we were changing the relaxing the lockdown, we had rules in different parts of the country. And there was a set of, you know, kind of a formula that was saying number of occupied beds, number of new cases, number of whatever. And if that gets you to a number that is X, then you have to apply that kind of rules on lockdown in that region, in that part of the country. And you have travel restrictions and stuff like that. And I think I don't see why this couldn't be implemented and coordinated by the federal government. Not just I don't see why, it would make a lot more sense for the federal government to coordinate these things. A couple of months ago, things were working out relatively well. The states were handling things relatively well, it seemed. But we were seeing the beginnings of people who wanted to reopen a little bit too quickly. And, you know, at that point, we can't rewrite history. At that point, we didn't quite know how it was going to go. And there were some concerns, for sure. There were some governors who were demanding that the lockdown be relaxed to save the economy. And I think at that point, a lot of people, and I certainly remember myself doing that, saying, it makes no sense if you're endangering the health of your constituents, because then not only do you get issues with health, with the pandemic spreading more, the epidemic spreading more, but also down the line, you damage the economy as well, because you're going to have this spread of the epidemic. So there were a few signs, but now we're certainly seeing how bad the effects have been. And the fact that the federal government is not coordinating back then, it was maybe an acceptable way of handling things. I think now it is the responsibility of the federal government, actually it would have been a few weeks ago, to step in and say, listen, this is at the very least, there should be recommendations. I don't know how it would work legally, the kind of power that the federal government has over states, or I'm not, you know, here to argue, I'm not a legal scholar. I don't know how it would work in practice, but I think there should be some mandatory elements, but certainly there should be guidance. The federal government should say, we have all the resources, we have all the data, we have teams that are compiling everything. This is what I think you should do if you're in this situation. The fact that there isn't that is certainly a mishandling, at the very least. And I hate that this is politicized, but it is Trump's responsibility. It is the head of the federal government who decides how to handle crises. And he should have put this into a working form a while ago, but certainly now. I think this is clearly a mishandling of this situation, which is bad enough. But then I get to the really horrible part of this entire affair, which is it's not just mishandling of the situation, which could be incompetence, which is, again, bad enough in itself. But the thing that really gets to me, and I'm sure gets to many, many of you in the US, is we're seeing this has become a political issue. And it hasn't become a political issue on its own. It's become a political issue because Trump has politicized it. President Trump has made it worse than it was. Instead of what we were talking about before, instead of making it of uniting the country, he has, for whatever political purposes, lack of moral compass, whatever, however you want to call it, he has encouraged the artificial division between the right and the left, essentially encouraging the right to fight safety procedures and demonizing safety procedures as leftist agendas. And maybe he hasn't, honestly, I haven't been following his Twitter account very closely, and maybe he hasn't said it specifically, but certainly he has not addressed this in a way that is responsible or that fits the responsibility of his office. And I think this is what a lot of people were talking about when we were, you know, I was very afraid of Trump for the first few weeks and months, I worried that something bad was going to happen and he wouldn't rise to the occasion. And over the couple of years, 3 years, it didn't really materialize. And things were chugging along and he didn't have a lot of responsibility. Again, I think a lot of people will argue against this view of the situation and situations. But, you know, overall, the economy was doing pretty well. There wasn't any major catastrophe. It wasn't too bad. There were issues. I'm not saying they weren't issues, but it wasn't as cataclysmic as I was afraid it was going to be. So I started thinking, well, maybe this is going to be okay. And the U.S. government is constructed in a way that mitigates the actions of the presidency and of, you know, the federal government can only do so much and the states, et cetera, et cetera. I think this situation is the thing that many were afraid of. And it's not the mishandling that is the worst part. That, again, would be bad enough. I think it's the encouraging of this pointless, dangerous, divisive view of these issues, which is quite frankly, and again, I apologize to the right side of the audience in the US, but it feels treasonous to me. It's defaulting on your responsibility as the President of the United States to manage something incredibly important and costing lives for perceived political gain, which, again, many people do, but the president usually has been until now, I think, no matter who you look at, no matter how you want to characterize Obama or the Clintons or the Bushes, they have all tried to be a unifying force and guide the country in times of crises. And there have been crises in America's history, certainly. Not everyone has been perfect. But the way Trump is handling this, the way this president is handling this, is to increase the conflict within the U.S. with the cost of important actions that could help manage the crisis. So, I mean, we could discuss this for a long time. I think the gist is pretty clear. If the word treasonous bothers you, that's fine. It's a very personal characterization, which I think might be, you know, treason is a very specific thing, and maybe it doesn't apply, the standards of that don't apply to what Trump is doing, but certainly betraying the spirit of his office, I think that is fair. And again, the fact that he is encouraging, and I mean, we've all seen the videos and of people in Florida and people arguing against lockdown and safety procedures. And I think a lot of people will say, oh, but that's a few crazies. You're always going to have those. Certainly. But they're always there. The thing is, if you encourage them, even without explicitly saying, you know, oh, awesome, good job, you're great. If you create an atmosphere where these kinds of ideas can become mainstream, then you're responsible for them becoming mainstream. And certainly, the president has been fostering that kind of atmosphere. So I'm sure a lot of people on the left side are listening to this and going, oh, yes, absolutely. I'm sorry, but I'm not really interested in talking to you because we already agree. What I would like is for the people, you know, who are uncertain or who are on the right side of the argument who are thinking, oh, but maybe there's this, or trying to excuse or explain this whole situation to, I would like for you to try to look at the situation in a very neutral manner. And maybe the best way of doing this is looking at the other countries. And don't give me that, you know, oh, the US is different. It's not the same as, you know, every country is different. Sure, that's true. But in this case, there are similarities in the way you handle crises, and you can adapt them, but there are still things to be learned from the experience of others. So that could be one thing. Looking at the numbers in an objective way could be another method to estimate whether or not things have been handled properly. Another way, if I may interject myself in this, is to listen to me. I try to be extremely open to different ideas and arguments. And I have limits, but if I would hope that after years and years of this show and trying to listen to everyone, if I come to a point where I'm saying, guys, I think this is, in my view, even as someone who's trying to look at every angle every time, this is a pretty bad situation, and this seems to be the reason why, I would hope that you, you know, you give stock, is that the way you put it, to my analysis, maybe a little bit more than you would someone who you perceive as being always in the other camp. But in general, it seems to me like the responsibility of the president is difficult to eschew. And I'm certain that if you're trying to find excuses for President Trump now, let me ask you this. If this was another president, would you be trying to find, you know, would you be as forgiving? I suspect you might not be. So what's the conclusion of all of this? I would hope that lockdown and safety procedures come back very quickly in the U.S., that this whole ridiculousness stops, that the states, even those like Florida, who have been arguing for saving the economy through relaxing of lockdown procedures, realize that this is bad. Because honestly, I'm not hoping for the presidency to start doing things, you know, on a federal level. So I would hope that the states start, you know, implementing these measures and taking it more seriously, because I want the U.S. to do well, obviously. And the other thing is, I'm being completely honest, I hope that this fallacy of everyone's as bad as one another, in their old politicians anyway, I hope this fallacy ends. Because certainly, we don't love politicians. I'm sure we all have our feelings about some or all of them. But the idea that they're all just as bad, and that, you know, Biden specifically in this case is a terrible choice, and Trump is a terrible choice, so I'll throw my hands up in the air and I don't care. That's a song, isn't it? And I don't worry. You know, I just flip everyone off. It has consequences. You need bureaucrats to do their job. And it's boring, and they lie, and all of that, maybe. And they take advantage of this and that. But this idea that Trump is just as bad as everyone else, and oh, but he's corrupt, everyone's corrupt. Oh, but he's an idiot, everyone's an idiot. It's not everything is on the same level. I think this is the proof of that. It's the way, he's in his own category. You have good and bad politicians, but he is something different. And so I don't think that you can still make the argument, you know, until 6 months ago, maybe you could have made that argument. It doesn't matter. The economy is doing great, blah, blah, blah. Now, I think we can make this argument. Trump, his personality and his attitude does have real consequences. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, for those who are very, very, very much to the right and who are very, very much anti-left, I don't think anyone's going to convince you. I'm sure, I'm guessing, you know, people who are on principle opposed to a thing or for a thing, I'm guessing nothing will convince you. I'm not sure how many of those people listen to this show, but maybe there are a few of you. I'm speaking to those who are on a more malleable, reasonable platform. People who think, you know, it's not like I'm married to a side of, you know, the political spectrum. People who might think, I thought it didn't matter 3-4 years ago. Now I think maybe it does, you know? That's what I hope happens. I hope the not just the moderate, but the people on the moderate side of the right and the left. I'm talking about the right now because this is what we're talking about. I would be saying the same thing about the left if we were in that situation. But the people who are, you know, not a diehard Trumpist, it does matter. And I'm sure it would hurt very much for you to vote for Joe Biden. But I would hope that at this stage, you understand that President Trump is actually in this crisis situation, not equipped, not able. And beyond this, this is a relatively mild crisis situation. Right, this is a pandemic that has had enormous consequences on the country and the world. What if there was a worse thing, a global conflict, a war, a thing where the badly handling a situation would have led to exponentially worse outcomes? That might happen in the next 4 years. Who knows? We don't know. That might happen in the next 4 years. For your sake and for mine, I really hope President Trump is not president anymore. Because beyond all of the right-left rhetoric, I don't think he's capable, equipped, willing, it doesn't matter. I don't think he's capable of handling a crisis. And this situation has proven that. So I hope we get someone who will put you to sleep, who's boring as hell, who is maybe going to push a couple of policies that you won't like, but that will be studious and bureaucratic and capable of following through on a rigorous crisis situation in a way that can make sense, because Trump is not capable of that. And again, if there's a situation that is worse than a pandemic, it's bad enough. Again, I'm saying bad enough all the time. It's bad enough that this is happening now with the pandemic, which is having very real consequences. But if that, you know, you manage to brush it off or think, well, you know, old people are going to die and then everyone will be immune. Actually, that's not how it works. But let's say you brush it off that way. There might be a situation that we're not able to brush off that way in 2 or 3 years. So, yeah. This has taken a lot longer than I thought it would. It's pretty good I didn't plan this as a simple editorial then. This is almost a full episode. I won't put it up for pay on the Patreon, though. I will keep it as a a non-pay episode, because I don't think this is the kind of thing that I'm promising in the show and the kind of thing that people pay for. This is, again, more of an editorial type take. So, but I hope you still got something out of it. Feel free to comment. You know, I'm not joking when I'm saying I'm always open to hearing different ideas and takes on things. And you know that that's what we foster on this show, and I hope that's why you listen. I'm even in the case of everything I've said here, I think it stands, but if you have a different take, I'm very happy to hear it. So comments on FrenchSpin.com, on Twitter, not Patrick, even on Instagram, not Patrick on Instagram as well, on Facebook, I'm not Patrick there too. And of course, if you get something out of this show, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thephineasclub. The link is in the show notes, so you can check that out there. And as you know, it takes barely 2 minutes to become a patron. So please consider doing that if you think the show has some kind of value. We'll be back shortly, I hope, with another episode. I hope you got something out of this one, and I will talk to you then. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.